This is Megatron. This is the glorious Megatron. And this episode of the Beast Unleashed podcast features Stephen C. Phillips, Mike Blanchard, and Michael Wilson.
Hello and welcome to the world's first ever Beast Wars Beast Machines Review Podcast. This is the Beast Unleashed Podcast, brought to you by the Geekcast Radio Network. I'm your host, TFG1 Mike, and I'm joined by the now,
Don't say it.
Surprised Wilson and Steve.
What?
Ron.
I think you have the wrong word there, Mike.
Yeah, I don't think that's the word you were looking for.
Well, what you said, you're the one that's put it on Twitter.
What? The word is not circumcised.
Well, the word is not circumcised, but
dumbass. There's a huge difference.
No huge difference, but that you said on Twitter.
I said castration, actually.
Oh
yes,
whatever.
Yeah,
big difference.
Yeah, big difference there. I mean, castration sounds a lot worse than what I actually had done, but. Nevertheless, it's out there on the internet. Everybody knows. Fine, you know.
Don't blame me. Blame your wife. She was the one that broadcast it on Facebook.
I know. What the hell? Like, I wasn't really going to mention anything about my condition, but
she's like, thanks. It's been freed.
That's right. Yeah. It's like, no strings attached.
Why I'm bringing it up is because you kept sending me all these goddamn insect and spider fucking videos in Facebook messages.
But you like spiders. You don't like spiders? What?
Hell no. Did you not listen to, you were at the recording when we talked about the episode. Were. And you know, yeah. They hate fucking insects.
Oh my god, yeah, that video was like this huge spider. It was like the size of my head.
It's like two seconds of it and shut it off.
Oh, this guy's like trying to capture the spider on the ceiling, and he's like, oh, look at that one, it's a huge spider. And he goes to put it in a Tupperware bin, and the thing jumps out, lands on his face. And he's like, ah! It was horrible.
And he's like, boil them, mash them, stick them in a stew.
Stick them in a stew.
Last week was a really huge fluke with all that video crap after the show, so yeah, we're not getting into that. Steve, what's been going on with you in the past 2 weeks, or past week, or however it was since we recorded one of these?
Not really a whole hell of a lot. For the most part, just... doing little minor updates to Predacon Empire in the meantime, and practicing my various voices, and working my ass off at work, and actually, for the first time ever, I've been sent home early at secondary job.
Wow.
Yes, because it's so dead that even, apparently, my job position is able to leave early, which is quite nice.
Not so nice if you're paid hourly.
I am. I can't take it anymore.
No.
Yes. And actually, it's very funny. This will probably be the first Beast Unleashed episode 2 here that we bring this up. Brian Kilby of Radio Free Cybertron sent me a message on Twitter the other day asking me if either me or Steve or whoever from GCRN wanted to be on the show and be interviewed about the whole podcasting network thing. So, yeah, we're going to be doing that pretty soon, probably the Saturday after this airs.
Wow.
Yes, it will be awesome.
Yes, it will be.
Epically so.
Yes. Very much.
I'm tempted to bring up why other people who do like-minded podcasts haven't had us over as a guest before.
Yes, I'm working on that. I'm slowly but surely working on that. Actually, it's funny you mention that, because I did kind of break the ice on that because Stefan has disappeared from the Twig annals, and I told Mike, I said, hey, look, you know, if you need a replacement, let me know. And I was on.
Yeah, it's like, what about that whole partnership thing we had going on there that we didn't actually see any benefit from?
Into that. Well, let's just not even go there. This is not.
What about the free commercials we've been running that we haven't actually seen any benefit from? That would have been nice to have, too. Maybe a little quid pro quo.
Anyways.
Headshot.
This is perfect. Go ahead.
Yeah, and a shout out to Brian because he is nice enough to see that, hey, you know, I'll scratch my back, you scratch yours, and you know, we're good to him. And
yeah,
I dig Brian. He's a great guy. I like his podcasts, and apparently he likes ours.
Yep. Well, he's been on several of the Toycast episodes. I've had him on because, I mean, he's a
Transformers
collector, so I figure, you know, who the hell else am I going to get to host the show, you know, at just random times? Not everybody is around, and I understand that.
He's a good guy.
Yep.
And I like those shows, too.
Yes. Let's see what else. I am no longer single. Not that that really...
Yeah, what the hell with that?
It's been going on for about a month or so, and I just didn't feel like broadcasting. That's all.
See, now, I thought you were... checking out the Seeker Girl chicks, and lo and behold, not the case.
I'm friends with them, and that's, you know, it's just online friend thing, you know, whatever. But you know, this is a little bit different, and I just didn't feel like broadcasting it at the time. It was, you know, I was gonna wait and see how it played out, because you know,
more Seeker Girls for me, I suppose.
Yeah, you stalker. He's going to BotCon and stalk all the Seeker Girls.
That's right.
See,
well, yeah.
I don't hear anything except for when it's broadcast on air. What the hell is wrong with you guys?
He put it on Facebook.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? What? How did this... What? Yeah.
Well, see, Steve doesn't always check Facebook every now and then. When he does, it's very random. Like, hit comment on a post I made like 4 weeks ago or something.
Oh, well, I... tend to check my Facebook every day.
What?
My email. And my Twitter.
Yeah, so do I.
I'm wired. I'm plugged in.
Other than that, not much else is really going on. My birthday is coming up, so hopefully I'll be getting more Mighty Mugs.
Yay.
That's another reason why I haven't had you on some of the Toycasts recently, outside of ones that we've done, because, yeah, I've been talking about Mighty Mugs, so...
it's the Mighty Mug podcast.
And I know how much you loathe the Mighty Mugs, but now that I actually have your address, I may start sending you Mighty Mugs.
Oh, God. I actually picked one up in the Toys R Us and was looking at it and thinking, these are really small. I didn't realize they were so small. I thought they would be a little bit taller, but they're like the size of my fist.
Well, they're taller, or they're bigger than the Rivaltech figures. I thought the Rivaltech figures were going to be huge.
Oh, no, those are tiny.
I know. Yeah. Those are like extremely tiny. They're like Minicon size. Again, I'm not going to like go into the whole debate about Mighty Mugs. If you like them, you like them. If you don't, you don't.
Yeah, I just didn't realize that I could put a Mighty Mug Starscream next to G1 Starscream, and, you know, they'd be roughly the same size.
Yeah. So what has been going on with you, Mr. Wilson, other than your little operation there?
Oh, nothing, actually. I've been at home popping Vicodin like candy and resting comfortably on an ice pack.
Yum, Vicodin. That,
Vicodin, that's right. And that's been my week. That's pretty much it. I'm still playing my video game, Dragon Age. It's a new one I started. And other than that, no. My wife's parents have been really good about watching the kids, and my wife has been really good about not making me do things that I would normally have to do. Around the house, and I've just been hanging out, trying to recover.
I was looking through your, I was looking to see if you added any more Facebook videos. of the kids. And I noticed you. I don't remember this scene earlier. But the drum set one, that was kind of cool.
Yeah, that was over Christmas.
Okay. Yeah, I rewatched the one with Gavin that he was throwing a fit about not being able to get in the bed.
Yeah, it's sad too because he's a climber, and now he can get up in the bed.
Oh, he can.
It hasn't been all that long since that video was taken, and he's up on the couch, he's up on the bed, he's wherever he wants to be, he can get up there. And it's a shame because it's nice when you can put things like on the couch or up on the countertop, you know, and he can't get at them.
Mm-hmm.
And now that's not so much the case. He will climb up and over pretty much anything between him and what he wants. He's up and over it. Yeah. So, you know, we went through the same thing with Aiden. Right. And you know, it's neat to see them do new things and discover new abilities. But you know, sometimes not so good for us because, you know, we don't necessarily want him playing with the laptop.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Not a good idea.
Yeah.
All right, well, I guess we're going to get into some episodes.
Where'd he go? Where'd I go?
Welcome to Enemy Arms, my former comrade. I hope you'll enjoy your stay. Dinobot.
I don't know how you brought me here, traitor, but prepare to stain the deck!
Wait. Could it be that an accident of technology in nature has actually created a transporter? Pterosaur. Perhaps a truce is in order.
A transporter? Oh, yeah! So that's how that kid cat ended up in our base.
And you here? Interesting development.
Yeah, say, we could turn our truce into an alliance, Dinobot!
An alliance? To what end?
Think of the cosmic magnificence. Together, we'll overthrow these low-grade metal knockoffs you've joined, and then rule the Predacons with two iron fists! Nothing can stop us!
First up today is Equal Measures, and once again, I do have my trusty booklet here. Cheetor is assigned to place a series of communication relay devices away from the Axelon, the Maximal ship, but Optimus orders him to stay put until a lightning storm blows over. The impulsive feline dashes off anyway, eager to beat the storm and show his... What is that? I don't know what the hell that says. Anyway, one of the devices gets lodged into a large cache of Energon, and Cheetor is... a shock when a freak bolt of lightning strikes him and the relay device he is holding, teleporting him kilometers away to the interior command center of the Predacon ship Darkseid. What did you guys think the initial and Michael, what are your initial, like, just overall story thoughts?
I don't know, I thought it was kind of improbable, if not impossible, altogether. That they're going to haphazardly create the world's first teleporter. You know, I mean, it was an interesting app. You know, again, I'm all about the character development. I think they fleshed out Cheetor a little bit, or as they call him in this episode, Cheater. Mm-hmm. And Dinobot really shows his manipulative side. Mm-hmm. I mean, he played Cheetor like a fiddle. Mm-hmm. And Cheetor really should have seen through it, but he didn't because he's, again, the impulsive kid.
Young and naive.
Exactly. And, you know, the synopsis kind of plays it off like, wow, Cheetor's just being impulsive. But he had that little kick behind him, which was Dinobot, you know, kind of greasing the wheels a little bit. Saying, oh, I agree with you entirely, and I bet you could do it. But I liked it overall. I liked the whole... whole episode. There was a lot of interesting things going on. And I also like that, you know, it kind of progressed the storyline.
Yeah, I agree with that. Steve, what are your initial thoughts on the actual plot of this episode?
Well, I like what you said on that, in terms of Dinobot playing Cheetor. I like the how Dinobot, it shows him kind of different from how he is later in the series. I mean, obviously, because this is the beginning. But it features Dinobot acting without honor for the most part, because he's just saying, okay, we have this teleporter that's just blow the Predacons to Kingdom Come. Not really an honorable way of doing it, but he's just all gung-ho on the idea.
He had his reasons, though, as far as, you know, he came right out and said, don't think that Megatron wouldn't do it if he had the opportunity. It wouldn't be a matter of,
true,
you know, blowing up the building but saving the people inside. It's save the building and blow up everybody inside.
Yeah. For me, I don't dislike this one, and so far throughout well, we reviewed the first three episodes, last episode of the show, I don't see any one-shots so far. I mean, there really aren't any one-shots, I don't think, in the entire series. They always come back to, you know, what's been going on up until now. They don't just basically retcon stuff in this show. You know, to go along with you guys, one of my notes was Dinobot is so treacherous. Actually, I wrote that after he tricked Pterosaur and then shot Pterosaur out of the toilet.
Sorry, I had to giggle with that. That was funny.
Yeah, that was funny.
Yeah.
I don't think airlocks actually have, you know, compressive eject systems unless you're in space, because that's literally the atmosphere shooting out.
Oh, I was going to say, I really love that toilet flushing effect.
That's...
Yeah. He's a big red turd, just skyrocketing across the sky.
Yep.
It's like a cross between a toilet and Team Rocket.
Yeah. Blasting off again.
Toilet paper Pokemon. Holy crap.
That would have been funny to see a little piece of toilet paper fluttering through the air as a tail. Like, woo! Ding!
I have to call you out, Mr. Wilson, because in the first episode, in the last episode we did, you said that the... one of those, I forget which episode it was, it might have been Beast Wars Part 1 or Part 2, where Waspinator, it's the only time you see him use his I-beams. That is incorrect, sir. In this episode, when he and Scorponok are chasing Cheetor through the base, he uses different color I-beams, but he uses I-beams.
Ooh, well, I don't think I would have said that, but...
Well...
That's not something that I would have noticed after, you know, 3 years of not having seen the episodes, but...
I'll have to go back and listen to... It was you that
said... I'm thinking, wait a minute, he had I-beams? That's, Dinobot had I-beams.
Waspinator do as well.
Yeah, I was surprised to see them use the I-beams, to be honest, because I thought that was a trait specific to Dinobot.
I used to think that as well, and then as I've come back to watch them all, I've kind of discovered it's mostly like a Predacon lackey type thing.
Except for Scorponok, his is the missiles.
And Tarantulas.
Yeah, true.
Well, Tarantulas is more of like a visor. He'd be like Cyclops or something.
Yeah. One thing I noticed, there is not a whole lot of Megatron in this episode until the very end.
That's because he got his ass blown away at the very beginning.
No, that's not this episode.
Yes, I'm getting them mixed up. Yeah,
I was about to say, that happens later, right?
Yeah. I mixed up my notes. But, yeah, they didn't feature pretty much anybody except for...
Lackeys.
Yeah, lackeys. It was just them.
I like the scene when I was going to say Tarantulas, holy shit, when Pterosaur gets transported to the Maximal base. He's like, where'd he go? Where'd I go?
Where'd I go? Yeah.
And then, of course, Dinobot comes in and, you know, I think it would have been cool if they kept the transporter gimmick, but I don't think it would have made for any... That's pretty much a plot device right there.
Yeah, I think it would be bad if they could just, you know, randomly jump into each other's bases at any given moment.
Yeah.
That's probably not something you want to have carry over from episode to episode.
Yeah, no, that's pretty much all my notes on this one. Overall, I really liked it. I didn't really notice any... I haven't really noticed a lot of animation flubs with this show. I mean, unless it's, like, character-based. Like, as far as the backgrounds and stuff,
yeah.
I haven't really noticed a whole lot. Steve, why don't you go next with some of your other thoughts that you may have?
Well, I love the... like I said before, the Dinobot dynamic in this of how he was just gung-ho. I also liked, you know, again, the toilet thing with Terrors who are getting flushed away after Dinobot extracted all the information that he wanted out of him.
Yeah.
And the teleportation, yeah, I agree with you on that. It was just mostly a good plot device, but I was kind of glad to see it go. Because, yeah, that would just be kind of a pointless battle. Oh, let's teleport. I can miss your shot. Oh, let's teleport again. Hi, I'm back. Oh, you know, just... it'd be kind of retarded to have. This is also the first time they had an actual working comm unit, which Cheetor promptly destroyed.
Didn't they do that before? This is like the second time that Cheetor has run off half-cocked, tried to put down a comm unit, screwed it up, ended up in the enemy base... came back and ended up with everything else botched.
Well, no, because what Cheetor was doing was...
He was putting surveillance posts out.
He was taking those relay posts. And what he had in other episodes, that comlink armband on his upper part of his...
I thought the relay posts were kind of like communications posts, and particularly because when he beamed back the last time, he beamed back along each post. And each one blew up as he came home.
I think that's because Megatron shot the transmitter.
Yeah.
So he kind of fried
the whole mechanism.
Right. I mean, that makes sense, but at the same time, it's you know, again, it seemed like a communication ring to me.
Well, it could have been. I think it was more of a spy ring, is what, like extended CCTV cameras or something.
It's not exactly stealthy if each one makes a beeline back to your base.
True. Again, the whole Energon vein ran under both bases in, like, this weird crisscross pattern.
Yeah. But, my question is, in the very beginning, you have a mountain, and, you know, Optimus is just kind of looking at it for some reason, and you see missiles launch and blow up the mountain. It's like, who's blowing up mountains?
Isn't that a replay?
I don't think so.
No.
I think that was in the beginning that basically a mountain blew up and exposed Energon, and he said, "Well, we're going to scrub this mission because too much Energon floating around now. We can't do it now. It's too dangerous."
It wasn't missiles, it was lightning. Is the lightning the whole point of why Cheetor wasn't supposed to go out was
lightning storm.
Lightning storm and wind storm going on. So it was probably lightning that hit the mountain, not missiles.
Yeah. No, I'm pretty sure there were missiles flying around and hit that mountain.
No, that was lightning.
It looked like missiles to me. But I just thought it was odd. It's like, well, are they just randomly going around blowing up mountains now to see which ones have Energon in them, or is that...
foreshadowing for later. For season 3 or 2. No, season 2.
Yeah. You know, the thing about the Energon vein running under both bases...
Yeah.
They've specifically said in later seasons that, I mean, I know I'm kind of getting ahead of myself here, but they've specifically said that in robot mode, as long as they're in the base, they're safe. Yes, I know places can have insulation, but if the Energon vein is right under your fucking base, give me a... I mean, come on.
No, I think the ship is protected.
Right.
Though. If the ship had a giant hole in it,
yeah,
then maybe not, but...
That's true.
They seem to be fairly well intact.
Yeah.
What I noticed though is that Cheetor was outside of the ship and still in robot mode for about half the episode.
Well,
and at one point he even remarked on it. He's like, "Cheetor maximize," and he goes, "Oh, wait, I already did that."
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you already did that. You've been in robot mode for 20 minutes. So I'm wondering at this point, you know, I'm wondering if he has, you know, some type of special insulation that keeps him from, short-circuiting after 2 minutes like everybody else does.
I don't think so, because, and the reason why, I'm not really arguing, I'm not trying to explain this, not really explain it to you, but I'm trying to prove it to you that when he was going out doing that, he was in cat mode until he got to the position that he was supposed to be at. He would transform and then plant the post. When he got to that last one where it got lodged in the Energon cache, or cache, or however the hell you say the damn word, you know, he was in robot mode that long period of time because he was trying to get the post up out. And by the time he pulled it up to the point where the Energon was coming up and it transported him into the Predacon base, he forgot that he was still transformed. So he wasn't really that... He wasn't exposed that much outside.
So technically he was inside, so it was okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. That makes sense. I'll buy that.
That the bases are insulated just like you would insulate your attic.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'll buy that. And he teleports in, and you have Pterosaur on the hover pad. And they're kind of playing hover pad tag. Despite the fact that Pterosaur can fly. So he didn't actually need the hover pad. I thought that was kind of strange.
You know, those hover pads in the Predacon base remind me of the hoverboard from Back to the Future.
Yeah.
Ooh, if you took the control stick off, the control stick at the side, if you took that off, they would be the hoverboard from Back to the Future.
Or like Daniel's hoverboard. In the animated movie.
No. Last 2 seconds.
Well, I mean, I was thinking, you know, if Cheetor was smart, he'd upend that hoverboard, use it as a shield. Just kind of, you know, deflect the shots with the shield and get the heck out of there, but it wasn't so much the case. But I did like the way he escaped. It's like, suckers.
True.
Jumps in the air vents. And I'm thinking, you know, it's strange that they have air vents because they don't actually breathe.
True.
They're robots. It's kind of strange. But, hey, whatever gets you out the door, right?
You are.
Sure.
My favorite line from the episode was, "This disc smells like Cheetor." I was like, what does Cheetor smell like? Does he get a slight tinge of biscuits and gravy to him? Or, what does he smell like? Jam with two A's? Or is that a hotshot thing?
He smells like slag.
Slag. Hot slag. What has he been eating lately? Biscuits and gravy. Oh, okay.
Oh, boy. Do we have any other thoughts on Equal Measures?
Good episode, although fairly forgettable.
Yeah, like I said before,
To some extent.
But like I said before, we really haven't seen, and I don't think we will see throughout the entire series, both series actually, Beast Wars and Beast Machines, you won't ever see a one-shot episode. It's like where, say, example, X-Men animated series, where you have Night of the Sentinels Part 1 and then Part 2, and then you have, an episode with the Morlocks that has nothing to do with continuity to that first two-parter.
I gotta argue that point, because I mean, we haven't talked about Power Surge yet, but that episode I think was a bit of a throwaway. Episode 3 was a bit of a throwaway.
Well, the web just sucks altogether, so I mean...
Well, I mean, it did. I was the only one of the group who really didn't think it was much of a throwaway, but here I am using it as an argument. But yeah, it was a bit of a throwaway up. It helped flesh out some of the characters, but honestly, it didn't do a whole lot to push the storyline forward. But Power Surge was the same way, and we'll be bringing that up soon enough. But But no, I think that there are some episodes that push the story ahead very well. The next one we're going to be talking about, Chain of Command, does that nicely. It really foreshadows a lot about what's going to come next. But then there are some episodes that don't so much.
Yes, very much so. Okay, so is that it for this one?
Yep.
This episode was the first one to include an Energon-powered fist bump.
Oh, at the very end. Oh, no, not at the very end.
No, it was Pterosaur and Dinobot making the deal.
Yeah, it's funny. People would have heard that in the audio that I used for this particular episode. So,
oh, the fist bump?
Well, part of that whole part of that when they first start making the alliance.
I thought that was funny because fist bumps are way ahead of their time in 96. I mean, honestly, I don't think that really became popular for another decade.
Yeah, well, they started it, so.
Hey, that's right. Well, I think it was necessary because they can't really shake hands because neither one has thumbs. So it's like, how do I do it? I'm not sure how to just live long and prosper over here, or what are we doing? Here. Just fist bump. Optimus.
Maximal torture chamber.
Whoa! Hey, power down! You're on our side now, remember?
Affirmative.
And Maximals don't have torture chambers! Although, you know, I could get behind that idea.
How did I get here?
We found you dumped in front of the command base hatch. Scrapped down and alone.
Aw, just like an innocent orphan in a B-movie.
Optimus.
Yeah, we were hoping that maybe the innocent orphan baby could tell us what happened to Optimus.
Optimus Primal was terminated. An alien probe has landed at the Standing Stones. It emitted an energy burst during Optimus's transformation. He vanished.
Wait a minute. Why was he transforming?
Predacon attack! We have no time for further analysis now. We must make another attempt to secure the probe from the Predacons. Rattrap, come with me.
Whoa, 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 whoa! Wait, stand by here! Who died and made you prime, scale face?
Optimus is certainly scrap, and I, as the most powerful of the group, shall replace him. Anyone who disagrees may challenge me now. Dinobot, maximize!
You've been messing with the wrong mouse, chopper face!
Wait! We're not Predacons here. We'll settle the chain of command in traditional maximal fashion.
Up next is Chain of Command. Investigating high levels of Energon at the Standing Stone Formation, the Maximals are caught in a surprise attack by the Predacons. Pterosaur destroys most of an Energon cache hidden within the center of the stones, expelling a huge energy beacon into the night sky, out into space. Later, Optimus Primal and Megatron spot a small alien probe and set out to investigate, but the probe emits a blinding pulse of energy and Optimus Primal disappears.
Well, say it like you mean it.
Well,
he disappears.
Disappears. Not dies. Disappears.
Yes. The first note that I have for this episode.
Yeah.
In the beginning, you don't see Cheetor anywhere among the Maximals at the Standing Stones. Yet after, when Megatron and the Predacons show up, he's automatically there. It's like the transporter from the last episode came into this episode.
He just ran really fast. Yeah. He was really fast. Mm. And he booked it.
Yeah.
He became one with the spots.
Oh, wow. Okay, then. Optimus Primal is dead 5 episodes in the beat.
Well, not entirely dead. I mean, he was mostly dead.
Well, he disappeared, but...
He's not all the way dead.
He was practicing.
It's not Transformers unless Optimus dies.
True. True. Very true. You know, I work with very low-functioning adolescents or young adolescents or young adults or whatever, and, you know, Scorponok, the way they portrayed him in this episode pissed me off, because he sounds like a very low-functioning adolescent. Megatron back! Megatron back! Scorponok left alone with Pterosaur and Wasp and Tarantulas! I almost said Waspinator. I mean, give me a fucking break. I mean, Jesus fucking Christ. It's like, holy crap. They have to have somebody that sounds like... And I don't like the term retard, because I got called that when I was a kid. I mean, they have to have somebody sound like a retarded robot.
I think that they're...
dunce.
On Scorpion.
No, I think that they're... You know, it's so early yet. This is what, the 5th episode? They're still trying to find his voice. He's had, what, 5 lines so far in the entire series?
Something like that.
And the first 3 were like, yes, Lord Megatron, you know, and now he's actually got a line. You know, I mean, I'm sure that as he speaks more, they'll get better at it.
Well, they do, but I don't think that they had to have him sound like a mentally challenged person the first more than 2 words he says.
I don't think he sounded quite that bad.
I did.
Well, I don't know. You might have been reading a little too much into it.
I don't know. For some odd reason, when Optimus's consciousness is inside the alien probe, I thought of one of the very first episodes of South Park where Cartman gets an alien probe stuck up his ass. I don't know why that thought occurred to me, but it did.
Alien anal probe.
Yes, very much so.
The probe itself is just a giant golden suppository.
Ooh,
hovering there.
That's
daring you to.
Gross. Yeah. You know, Michael, you were talking about in the first episode of this podcast that when the mountain debris was coming down, there wasn't a whole... You said that there should have been more of it than what there was. The same thing with the rocks around the Maximal base when they start getting attacked by the Predacons and they come out to defend themselves. The blasts just bounce or deflect off the rocks. They don't destroy the rocks, and they are... I looked at this. They are at least a good 5 feet away from the shielded ship. So it's not like it's bouncing off the ship shield. I thought that was kind of weird.
I got nothing there. maybe the rocks should have exploded. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. Waspinator getting shredded by a giant Gatling gun. I love this part.
That wasn't funny. That was horrible. It was brutal is what that was. I mean, later on in the series, Waspinator getting blown up. I mean, blown to bits, like limbs everywhere, and just a head going, "Me Waspinator shot." Or yeah, I think the signature line is something like, "The universe hates Waspinator." But I mean, this time, this first time, I don't think it was comical in any way. It was, I mean, he got fragged. I mean, that Gatling gun leveled at him, and it started spinning, and his arm blew off. I mean, how badly do you got to be hurt when pieces of your body start falling off? It was just brutal. And I don't think that they've had, you know, kind of brutal frags like that yet in the series. I mean, like I said, later on it becomes comical. But this time it was, I mean, you know, really, really bad. Rhinox did a number on him.
Rhinox was out for pieces.
Yes. You know, I will fully admit that Rhinox, while he's not my favorite like, I wouldn't put him, like, amongst my number, my top five favorite characters in the show. He's not the worst character in the show, and he does have a personality all his own, which we will find out later in future podcast episodes. But it's just funny the way this scene plays out, because Waspinator thinks he's being all smart and sneaking up on him, and whatever Rhinox is working on, he sees Waspinator's reflection in the thing, and he just kind of, like, hangs his head and goes, just shakes his head, he's like, He turns around. Over
dumbass. The- yeah.
I'm busy. You know, and just, I found that so funny. I don't know if it's the fact that I found Waspinator getting pretty much blitzed for the first time, or if it was just the fact that it's a giant fucking Gatling gun. It's just cool.
It was, yeah. It was brutal. I mean, like I said, later on, it's funny. This time it was like, wow, he really got tore up. And, you know, you don't really know if they're going to be able to fix him.
That's pretty much it for my notes. Overall, I think this is a really good episode. I really like the way that it kind of flowed from beginning to end. Steve, what are your thoughts on this one?
I liked that it had Primal in a box. Yes, that's right. I bring it up again. The Stormtrooper shats are, of course, always priceless, except, you know, where they like to reuse story plot lines as far as when Primal mysteriously disappears.
Mm-hmm.
And then comes back to save the Maximal's asses at the end of the episode. Mm-hmm. And I love that when Dinobot came out of... What's that?
His aim is miraculously better when he comes back.
Yeah. Oh, always. Every time.
Yeah.
It's like he has, like, brain degradation in between. And then they're like, oh, we've restored you. I think you can kill him now. But I liked it when Dinobot came out of after the probe zapped everybody and put him in stasis lock, and they were standing around him when he came out of the CR chamber, and he's like, oh, shit, I'm in a maximal torture chamber. And then Rattrap's like, we don't have those, but that's a good idea.
We should definitely try one of those out. Yeah.
And then this is, of course, the start of Rhinox's oh no's.
Yeah.
Kind of like Megatron's yes.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't catch that one. Where was that?
It's right
when he's in the base.
Right. It's where they've pretty much settled the whole leadership debate, whether it be Dinobot or Rattrap.
Yeah.
And then Rattrap says, you know, we gotta go out there, we gotta fight, we gotta defend the base, and Rhinox is like, oh, okay, let's go. No, Rhinox, you stay here and build a device to, you know, release Optimus's consciousness from the thing, from the alien probe, and he's like, oh, no.
He's like, yeah, I'll get right on that.
Yeah. Going in, I'm not trying to interrupt you, Steve, but this battle, outside of the fact that I found the Waspinator thing pretty funny, Dinobot gets some pretty good shots in on Megatron with that fist fight that they did.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely did like that.
I think he was pretty single-minded. He just ran out the door, saw Megatron, and said, I'm gonna kick your ass. And, you know, and he didn't follow orders, didn't seem to want to do anything but beat the shit out of Megatron.
Yeah.
Rather single-minded, that.
Yes. Do you have any other thoughts, Steve?
No. Although not one of my favorite episodes, I would still say that it was a pretty good episode. And pretty character building for everyone involved.
Mm-hmm. Michael, what are your thoughts on this one?
I like the episode. I like the fact that they're pushing it forward. We had seen the Stonehenge, the ring of the rock ring earlier in the season, and they kind of said, "Well, I wonder what that's for." You know, and this time around, they show you what it's for. It's a communication hub to talk back to the alien presence. And, you know, this episode kind of introduces us to the aliens. They don't actually come out and say, oh, it's the Bok. Or, you know, but it introduces the fact that they exist. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and at the end, they kind of foreshadow the fact that, oh, yeah, we'll be seeing more of those aliens later on.
Yeah.
So they're kind of introducing the backstory and kind of pushing it forward. And I like those. I mean, I like those better than just throwaway apps.
Right, right.
And I like Optimus Primal kicking back and reading a book.
When did he do that?
In the beginning of the episode, he's just kind of, you know, kicking back it wasn't the very beginning. It was after they detonated the communication device at Stonehenge. And that night, he's just kind of kicking back reading a book. And he looks up in the night sky, and there's shooting star. You know. And I thought that was neat. He was just kind of hanging out and looking up. And then Megatron, after a beat, you know, he looks up and sees the same shooting star over the same mountain. And I was thinking of Fievel.
Oh, God.
Megatron and Optimus. Somewhere out there.
Stop right now. Before we go on, I think we need to go on to the next episode now.
Because we can't break into song?
No. We're not.
Come on.
No, we're not breaking into Fievel song.
Keep the sky so true. Alright, fine.
Do you have any other thoughts on this episode?
I don't think I do.
We are moving on.
Power that rots alive with it. Inner time. Enough to power an army. A scan. Pterosaur, terrorize!
Danger. Energon surge. Return to beast mode or stasis lock is imminent.
I must act fast. A small sample will do. Directly into my superstructure. I've never felt such power. I'm invincible.
And finally up today is Power Surge. Pterosaur discovers a floating mountain filled with a huge supply of unstable energon. Returning to the dark side, Pterosaur challenges Megatron for leadership and soundly defeats the mighty dinosaur. But this new power source comes with a price. Pterosaur finds he must recharge often to maintain his newfound power levels. When the Maximals learn of this strange energon formation, Optimus and Rat Trap head out to the mountain in order to neutralize it. I don't know
if we should do overall plot thoughts or just go straight into our notes. I mean, I think we should save the overall plot thoughts, like how we like the story or if we didn't like it till the end. So one of my first notes that I wrote down was, Pterosaur finds a floating island. This reminds me of when Beachcomber found the Golden Lagoon.
That's what I was thinking.
It might be just because I saw Avatar like twice in the last couple of weeks, but I was thinking of the Hallelujah Mountains.
Ew. Okay.
Have you seen it yet?
No, and I will never see it.
What?
No, never.
There's something scary wrong with you, sir.
So the Halogeny Mountains are basically floating mountains on Pandora. And I saw this, and I was like, I so see where Cameron got that now.
I think, I don't know, well, I'm sure they've done, oh, they did do it in G1, but my second note that I wrote down was, can you say drug abuse episode? But, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, and I'm thinking back to G1, if you look at the episode, oh crap, what's it called? The one where, Thief in the Night, where Trypticon and Octane are in Carbomia, and they're just siphoning off Energon. This is kind of like that, but I like the way they shot the aerial battle between Optimus and Pterosaur. I thought that was a really good visual.
Yeah, I definitely loved that battle.
I had noticed that maybe it was just the aerial shots. I'm not sure, but the landscapes are improving, or seem to have improved. The first couple episodes, I was really aggravated with just how, you know, how dead they seemed, you know. But now you've actually, you know, the mountains seem to be a little more plentiful. The textures are better. You can see the forests in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to look a lot better. They really showed it off in the beginning when they had the eagle soaring through the mountains, and I thought for a second there that they were going to introduce Air Razor, and then the eagle was eaten by Pterosaur.
Yes.
And I thought, this is really nice. They've really done a really good job with the CG here. And then, chomp, there goes the eagle.
Yeah. As I've said before in the first episode, and I will continue to say it throughout the entire show, Pterosaur is Starscream for Beast Wars. He even destroys Megatron more than G1 Starscream ever came close to doing.
Yeah. I noticed that. Well, when Megatron was blown up, I mean, we just saw Waspinator in the last episode get fragged. And this one was more like closer to comical, but still like, wow, his head came clean off. That was rough. I mean, yeah, I mean, he was still attached by, like, wires and such, but, you know, this is the first time they really said, okay, not only can we completely dismantle a character, but we can gather up all the pieces and bring him back to life.
Mm-hmm.
So I was almost happy to see him at the end.
Yeah. That's it. My notes. Michael, why don't you go next? What are your thoughts on this one?
Well, I noticed that they find the Mega Cannon from, what was it, episode 2?
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, it was 3, yeah, from the web, where Cheetor's like, oh, they're finding this Mega Cannon. Whatever will they do with it? And I didn't think they did anything with it. And here it is, popping up out of the rocks, and it homes in on Maximal Signatures.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of cool. I thought that was nice that they didn't actually say, this is the one we found 2 episodes ago, but, mm-hmm. you know, it kind of seemed that way to me, so that was kind of cool. Along with the improved landscapes, they also improved the exploding mountain effect.
Yes.
When they blew up the Hallelujah Mountain this time, it looked a lot better than the first one. Mm-hmm. The first time they did it, it was like, oh, maybe 5 or 6 pieces of rock going woo through the air. Whereas here it was more like, you know, Death Star explosion.
Well, alright, but the difference is when I would say that the difference is in that first part where they blew, in the first episode or second episode or whatever it was of the show, where they were, Scorponok, where his missiles hit it blew off chunks of the mountain. Whereas this, they were blowing up a giant pile of Energon, basically, because the Energon was in that floating mountain. Granted, the Energon was in the actual mountain in the first part.
Yeah.
But they didn't know that there was Energon there. They knew. Optimus and Rattrap knew that there was, this thing has huge amounts of Energon, and when he set Rattrap puts the charges,
the detonation charges right on two pieces of Energon. So it was more the Energon exploding than the actual mountain. But I, you know, I see your point.
I chalked it up to better CGI.
True.
So what do you think, Steve?
Well, I would say that I definitely like the floating island thing where Pterosaur, you know, got power mad and crazy. I do agree with that it was kind of like the Golden Lagoon, but at the same time, it reminds me of something from the Generation 1 Marvel comics, where Starscream gains the power of the Underbase, which makes him ungodly strong.
Didn't he become the Underbase at that point, though?
Yeah, well, eventually. He absorbed enough of it at one point that he became it, so it would have been interesting to see an Energon version of Pterosaur.
Giant floating Pterosaur head.
I
like the way that Pterosaur powered up, though. I mean, his voice changed, and his shoulder cannons got bigger, and he got the scary red glow.
You know what it was? He grew balls.
Great big red balls. Well, I mean, if your shoulder cannon suddenly became three times their regular size, that's definitely a ball grower.
Yeah.
For lack of a better term.
Think of what it would have done if Black Arachne just... Anyways.
Oh, damn.
Oh! I think I just moved 6 inches.
Wow.
Low blow. Anyways, yeah, sorry, I had to go there. But yeah, Pterosaur definitely had more of a Starscream vibe to him in this episode, especially slagging Megatron, which I was kind of disappointed to see him get slagged, but at the same time, it was so ironic and nice to see Megatron come back and basically rub it in Pterosaur's face that, oh, you're a weak little bitch now, and I'm back to full power. What now?
Yeah, they spare us the actual beatdown, but I'm sure it wasn't pretty.
They save that for the in-between episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the third showdown again. Once again, as always, between Tarantula and Rat Trap.
Yeah,
those two seem to be the constant struggle between any entire series of Beast Wars.
Yes,
it was a nice fight, though. I mean.
Oh, yeah. It's always an interesting fight when those two are involved.
Well, considering they couldn't transform. So.
Yeah.
It didn't gross me out as much as previous. It grossed me out, but...
Mike had to fast forward through it.
Shut up.
Yeah, Mike couldn't stand the eight eyes and the multi-arms. He's like, oh, I can't handle this.
Can't take it. Silence. Chirp, chirp,
yes,
chirp.
Bang head.
Yeah.
But then another part I liked is that Rat Trap kind of started bonding with Primal more and was kind of like, don't tell the other guys, but you're alright, you know, just... He kind of warmed up to the idea of being a team player more so than he had been in the past.
Right. Yeah.
And then...
Go ahead, sir.
There's one other thing. Oh,
sure.
Sorry. You get to see Rat Trap play his first video game of the series.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
He's playing virtual poker.
Oh.
Which you'll see him play a ton of more games before the series is up.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. I didn't even catch that. I mean, I caught it. You know, Primal comes over and turns it off and says, you know, back to your duty, son. Yeah. But, I didn't even realize that he was a game player.
Yeah.
Yes, Rat Trap is a gamer.
What I dig is, you know, out of all the characters, Pterosaur seems to get the most, I don't want to say repaint fodder, but in this episode alone, I mean, he gets his power-up version, and then at the end, when Megatron confronts him and says, "Aha, I'm going to beat your scrawny little ass," and he turns completely white. Which I thought was funny.
No, he turns gray.
Well, gray, white, you know, but I mean, he pales. We'll put it that way. And then I also noticed that in Equal Measures, he gets charbroiled.
Yep.
So he's like, yeah, he's extra crispy. So I mean, out of all the characters, I think he's had, you know, probably 3 reskins already.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool. I probably wouldn't have pegged him as a character that would receive that much attention from the animators. And good.
Oh, you go ahead.
I'm gonna say that the one of the reasons I liked this episode too was that it was a throwaway episode. I mean, there was nothing really gained as far as storyline or wars won or battles won between each faction, but they did introduce some funny quotes. Like my favorite was Rat Trap says, so you know that's crazy, don't you? And Optimus says, well, sometimes crazy works. I'm not sure how many times he actually does that or says that, but throughout the series, but I think that's a memorable line.
Oh yeah, every time.
Yep. Yeah.
We need to, I guess, are we done talking about this particular...
I have a couple more comments.
Okay.
I actually looked them up on the wiki because I was kind of trying to figure out some things. There is an animation and technical glitch in the episode.
Mm-hmm.
When Tarantula shoots his line to the floating mountain and he begins screwing up it. It says the mountain is revolving, so what is his line anchored to?
The line doesn't rotate, yeah.
And then,
I thought that was funny.
And there's also, I guess I stand corrected on the cards. Somebody apparently translated the text that was on it, and it's Cybertronian for old maid cards. So yeah, so I guess Rat Trap likes playing old maid.
That's funny.
And Megatron has a line in there where he states that. You already learned your lesson about challenging me, Terrorsaur, suggesting that he's been in a previous scuffle with the Predacon commander.
He hasn't?
Well, it's suggesting that he has, but he hasn't so far.
I was going to say, with him being the resident of Starscream, I kind of assumed that that had been the case.
Well, it's not the last time.
That's...
Yeah.
So is that all we have for Power Surge?
Affirmative.
I think so. Aside from Tarantulas, you really see Tarantulas scheming.
Oh,
as soon as Megatron goes down, Tarantulas is like, okay, what's up? What's the deal? How can I get in on this?
Yeah. One thing that we were going to bring up in episode 1 of the Beast Unleashed podcast, actually 2 things. If you'd like to send us questions on Twitter or email, you can do that by following Beast Unleashed, or you can email just email me or Steve or I don't know if Michael, you want to give your email address out. Mine is tf1podcast@gmail.com. Steve, what do you want to use for this?
I'm going to do steve@geekcastradio.com.
Okay. And you can pretty much find Michael on Twitter at PeconCourtMichael. So if you'd like to ask us any questions, or really, it'd probably be asking Steve questions because he is the Beast Wars fanatic over there.
Yes, heavy Beast Wars fanatic.
The other thing Steve wanted to introduce in the first episode, I just completely forgot about it, was ask a character. As a lot of people know, Steve does do Beast Wars Megatron's voice. He also does Dinobot, and I believe... Don't you also do Waspinator?
Correct.
So what did Beast Wars Megatron think of the first episode of the Beast Unleashed podcast?
Very excellent. Yes.
Okay. Now that those little segment bits are introduced, now I actually remember to put them into this episode.
I hope he's not confused with David Kay, because we do have David Kay inserts, too.
Well, we do, but no, because this is in the actual episodic recording, and the David Kay stuff is separate. The David Kay stuff is bumpers.
But that's like the highest level of flattery when somebody says, "Well, was that David Kay or was that, you know?"
Well, David wasn't even sure when we interviewed him. I mean, we've said this before. When I asked Steve, I said, "Steve, why don't you show Mr. Kay, you know, your ability?" And Steve did a little bit of the voice, and I was going to say Megatron. And David said, "Wow, that's probably the best one I've seen or I've heard yet." You know, it was Steve's version is probably the closest to Kay that I've ever heard.
I think it's the closest I've ever heard too. That's being kind of cocky there, and
does damn voice. All right. Well, so.
It's bad when you walk around work and that's the voice you use 90% of the time, especially when you're complaining.
All right. We are going to take a quick break. You're going to hear some bumpers from, I believe, either Mr. K or Mr. Chalk, and we will be right back with the outro.
This is Megatron, and you're listening to the Beast Unleashed podcast. Oh, yes.
This is quote number one for episode two of the Beast Unleashed podcast.
And Maximals don't have torture chambers. Although, you know, I could get behind that idea.
This is quote number two of episode two of the Beast Unleashed podcast.
But my arms feel like refried rubber bands.
You are listening to the Beast Unleashed podcast.
Thank you for joining us here on the Beast Unleashed podcast. There are several ways to get in contact with us. Leave feedback for the show. First, you can visit www.geekcastradio.com. Find all the other podcasts there. Second, you can stop by our brand new forums, PredaconEmpire.com/Nexus. And the third is you can leave the show feedback in iTunes. Please do this. I will have to check the iTunes feedback. I know we only have one episode out so far, 12. Besides the interviews and the episode zero, we have, like, as far as us reviewing the actual cartoons, we have one episode out so far, so I'm going to check it again. We have a voicemail line. Call us and leave us your thoughts on each episode. Be sure to say what show you're leaving the message for and your name. The number is 502-526-5821. You can follow us on Twitter. The short name there is Beast Unleashed. Mine is TFG and Mike. Steve, what is your Twitter?
SCP21.
And Michael?
PeaconCourt Michael.
Yes. Before we do the other part of the closing, I'd just like to send this isn't really Beast Wars related, but I'd just like to bring up what an awesome privilege it was for me to interview Tara Strong. That was so cool.
Yeah, she did sound very welcoming in the interview.
Yes. And it was just so cool. We got a couple of cool clips for All Things Transformers. I got some Bubbles clips for Tooncast. It was just a great little interview that we did.
Nice.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Beast Unleashed podcast. Join us next time when we will be reviewing three more episodes from Beast Wars Season 1, those being Fallen Comrades, Double Jeopardy, and A Better Mousetrap. For now, I am TFG and Mike with
Steve Megatron Phillips
and Michael Wilson.
Megatron,
my ice is melting.
Megatron, close the show before Mr. Castration over there gets melted.
Stay tuned to the next Beast Unleashed podcast with Steve Megatron, TFG1 Mike, and Pecan Court Michael.
What? No? Yes.
Oh, yeah, I was waiting for it. Wait for it.
Oh, excellent. Yes.